Ladies and gents, we're back with our final bonus episode from the Smiths. This one is with Mark Branch, head coach of Wyoming, but back in 1993/94, he was a redshirt freshman and won a national title, entering the national tournament with a losing record. This was just an awesome conversation, and I wanted to include it. And this will be the last episode dropping with relation to the Smith documentary. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. It's been an incredible ride this past week. It's done far better than anyone could have possibly imagined. So thank you all so much. We'll be back on Wednesday with episode 211. Peace!
Iconic wrestling coach Dan Gable once said, "Pain is nothing compared to what it feels like to quit. Give everything you've got today, for tomorrow may never come." Gable could be describing those whose achievements have earned them the honor of being inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. Etched in stone, the stories of wrestling's legends will take you inside the lives of over 200 of the greatest wrestlers in history as they share their never-before-told stories about their trials, tribulations, and triumphs. Competitors, coaches, teammates, and those who knew these athletes best will also weigh in on their accomplishments with their own unique perspectives.
Mark Branch, let's start at the very beginning, sir, of your Oklahoma State journey. When you arrived on campus, what was the mood with John winning the Olympics, but also kind of having the investigation looming overhead?
Yeah, it was awkward. It was really strange. I remember the first day that I went up to the wrestling office when I arrived on campus. I went up to the wrestling office and actually passed Jose on his way out, literally carrying a box. And John was at the Olympics. So I'm trying to remember, I can't remember if it was a week or so before he got back and kind of everything started to kind of go into motion as far as the beginning of his era. And yeah, I mean, it was obviously the big topic was, what is the NCAA going to what are they going to hand down here? Because the investigation had been wrapped up when I got to campus. So I wasn't part of any of that. But obviously it was on everybody's mind and John addressed it a lot until it was handed down. And then it was a little bit like a death sentence. I mean, it was really close. It was as close as you can get to a death sentence without actually getting it. So it's pretty gloomy.
And were you recruited by Joe or by John?
I kind of fell in between. I couldn't tell you exactly. John wasn't really doing much recruiting. I mean, he's getting ready for the 92 Olympics. So I went in the spring of 92 and he was definitely in charge during my official visit. But there was, I'd received a few letters from Oklahoma State when Joe was in charge, but nothing personal, no phone calls, no really contact beyond a letter or two. And it was probably just a form letter or whatever they sent out to all the Oklahoma kids. But, I was recruited quite a bit by OU. And then all of a sudden I got a call, and to be honest, I couldn't tell you exactly who it was. It may have been Woody Woodburn. I don't even know if they were on staff. I don't know if there was really a staff, but just said, you want to come down this weekend for a visit. And so I jumped in my car and drove down to Stillwater and, committed by the end of the weekend.
And for someone growing up in Oklahoma, what's it mean to commit and then show up to Okie State on day one?
It was a dream come true, and not only growing up in Oklahoma, but I grew up exclusively an Oklahoma State fan. My dad played for Henry Iba, played basketball for Henry Iba at Oklahoma State. My mom went to Oklahoma State. So I was born into it. But then with the wrestling tradition and history, I went to wrestling camps down in Stillwater and idolized those guys. So it was a dream come true that, you know, to be honest, until that phone call that said, you want to come up tomorrow, until that phone call, I had come to grips with the fact that I was not going to have a chance to go to Oklahoma State. My family had, I mean, we literally had those conversations to go, man, that stinks. That would have been the coolest, you know, because growing up, that was, you know, everything I wanted. That was the end point, right? Like, if I can just go to Oklahoma State, that's everything. So, when reality kind of started to creep in, you're like, wow, that's actually far-fetched. And I didn't realize it until kind of that moment that I wasn't that highly touted. I wasn't on anybody's radar. I was very, you know, I was very much not going to get recruited by Oklahoma State. And to be honest, if it wasn't for the NCAA investigation, I have no doubt in my mind that I wouldn't have been at Oklahoma State if it wasn't for the investigation, because it definitely scared off the best kids. And I would say Tommy Chesbro and Myron Roderick were guys that knew who I was, but to be honest, John didn't probably know who I was at all. Except maybe Tommy Chesbro going, hey, you should look at this, you know, this tall gangly kid from Newkirk. So, you know, I think I definitely was a benefactor of the NCAA investigation, which is weird, but reality.
It's crazy to say that. And at that time, how big was John Smith in the world of wrestling when you were coming up through high school?
Yeah, I mean, he was at that kind of that, I guess you would say, that untouchable level, meaning, you know, John was so big that when you go to camps, you didn't really ever get to say hi or talk to him or shake his hand. I mean, it was like in and out celebrity status, right? You come in, show a low single leg, and then walk out, and kids were like, you know, oh, I want your autograph. Nope. You know, it was all business. You know, and so that was kind of weird because, you know, like I said, I grew up idolizing all those guys and guys like Kendall Cross and Kenny Mundy. You know, they were still like, you know, they'd teach a session and then hang around and talk to the kids, and John was gone, you know, swept off into his limo. Not really, but it was kind of like, you know what I mean? He had become that, at that huge level. So it was such a weird, I tell you what, my recruiting trip was surreal. It was just like, man, this is like, I'm on the inside, of this family, you know, and I got to spend a little bit of time with Pat on my trip, on my recruiting trip, which was kind of funny. A little bit of a funny story, but the funny thing is, like, I thought at the end of that week, I'm like, I'm in to the OSU wrestling family. I'm on the inside. And I, you know, especially with the Smiths. And then when I realized I got to, Stillwater, and Pat had no idea who I was, and I'm like, but we hung out, we were like buddies, you know. He had no idea my name, anything, you know, nothing. And it was just crushing, and they're like, man, I was living this dream where I thought I was I was within the royal court here. And I'm not, so I'm just I'm a serf here. So it was definitely pretty cool and interesting.
And knowing, looking back now, knowing that John was getting ready for Fisher and he was going through all the internal battles he was probably in like another dimension on that recruiting trip, you know, just not even present as a coach. Cause he said he was barely present that year at all. Cause it was him coaching with Kenny, but also training and wrestling.
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, you know, and that's where John, has that special ability. I mean, he definitely, you know, he was in a different world, but at the same time, you know, when it was time with him, whether it would be a dinner, you know, and to be honest, he wasn't involved in every part of the recruiting visit, but when he was there, you know, he was engaged. He was right here, you know, talking to you. And you know, when we met at the end of my trip, it was pretty easy for him to hook me in. And so he definitely hadn't checked out when it came to, you know, hey, I do have some business to take care of, you know, and yet it's you're right. I mean, it's like, who knows what was going on in that competitive world of his, because, you know, at that point there was no doubt that the pressure was mounting on him, you know, and looking back at seeing him retire, you know, I think a lot of it was just, man, it's time. And I think it was like stacked up on him. I mean, I think I remember hearing stories about him just like losing his hair, and, you know, I imagine the stress level was unbelievable for him, but, and the stress, and that was the stress he was putting on himself, I'm sure, as much as anything.
But then also amplified by the whole investigation and by C being on the way out, because, you know, Oklahoma State, people forget, in 1990, they won their second in a row. In 91, Iowa had a super team, but, you know, assuming that everything would have stayed in place, OSU would have been battling for team titles. And not that you guys weren't, you were in 94, but before that, there was a couple rough years, and after that, didn't get back on top for a while. But you know damn well, if C wouldn't have gotten all that trouble, the program got in that trouble, John would have stayed competing, he would have cruised through 92, because 92 was only close because he had so much going on in his life. And so you get there, fall of 92. How publicized was Pat's chase for four titles at that point?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was obviously a huge thing, but when the sanctions came down, you know, that obviously derailed everything. And you know, thankfully he had that redshirt year. But yes, at that moment, the big talk was, how's he going to get to four? Is it going to be at Oklahoma State, you know, or is he going to go to Arizona State and be with Leroy? You know, so there was a lot and me being an incoming freshman, I didn't ask questions. I wasn't elbowing the older guys going, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think's going on? I mean, I was just really just sitting in the corner observing, had no idea what was going to go on. Didn't know the dynamics of different situations. You know, obviously heard about some of the guys that had already left. And so it was a lot of, there were a lot of unknowns, and Pat being one of those, you know. And then, you know, really it got settled pretty quick from my perspective, I guess, but it got settled pretty quick that basically Pat was going to stay in red shirt. Everybody that had a red shirt would take the red shirt. You know, Alan Freed was the big key there that just burned a year. And so, you know, it was pretty crazy. It was a really weird year. It was a year in which, when we actually got into that season, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I know everybody that has a red shirt, but this is maybe my only chance to ever step out and start for Oklahoma State, because our team was so watered down. We were pulling kids off campus to put in the lineup. And I saw, I'm like, hey, I could actually wrestle, you know, and I could get a letter jacket. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, this is my shot. And John weighed me in for a duel, which was funny. I didn't have any conversation with me, just told me I was weighing in. And I weighed in and suited up, and my family came. Of course, they came to all the matches, but they came, and I, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, you're coming to watch the match, but I'm suited up. And they were like, what's that mean? Are you going to wrestle? Are you burning your red shirt here? And I'm like, you know, in a lot of ways I wanted that, you know, I'm like, that would be okay. I would be okay with that, because I'll get my chance to wrestle for Oklahoma State, and I may not ever see that chance again.
So for people who don't realize, they look at you now, they say NCAA champ, you know, head coach, you've been an assistant coach at Oklahoma State, won a ton of national titles. But to your point, when you came in, you weren't super highly recruited. So you're thinking, shit, this may be my only shot.
Buddy.
And how did that team do that year, John's first year, 92-93?
Yeah, it was obviously the worst team in the history, right? And, you know, I think they won maybe three dual meets, you know, and they honestly – they were pulling kids off of campus. I know maybe a few, but I remember there was a 118 pounder that won the intramural tournament on campus that they pulled into the room, and he was in the lineup. It was that kind of a year, you know. It was all hands on deck, how they won three duels or whatever. I think it was three or four duels, but it was bad. It was tough, you know? But you also saw the star power, and I'm not talking about myself, 'cause I hadn't, you know, I wasn't, again, I wasn't on the scene until I was on the scene. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't even creep on the scene. It was just kind of an overnight deal. But you had Pat, you had Alan, you had Nick Perler, you know, and those were those three real basic guys that you knew were going to be there at the top. And then you had JJ McGrew, who had transferred in, you know, and he had kind of, I would say, somewhat proven himself already. You know, we knew he was going to come in and make an immediate impact. But then there were the pieces, I guess, of that puzzle that kind of were still waiting. But you knew in that room, you're like, man, there's some studs, and just Pat and Alan themselves. Mm-hmm. I think when you have that level, I mean, you talk about having a lot of hope just in those two guys alone to go, man, these two guys are shoo-ins to go win national titles. So we have something to build around, you know? And so nobody was panicking. It was just like, let's just get through this year and be done with it and get ready to be back on top. I would definitely say the mood was, we're going to take basically an embarrassing year and we're going to turn around next year and be in the mix. And I would even say a lot of confidence to be in the mix at the highest level. Meaning, I'm not going to say that we were sitting there going, we're for sure going to win it, but we knew, I think, in that room that we were going to be a team to contend with, that we could go, you know, win the NCAA title.
And when you guys went into that next season, one of the first big duels of the year was Penn State. Did you travel to that one?
I did. It was such a, I traveled because it was not only the duel with Penn State, but there was also the Lock Haven Open, and it was on Thanksgiving weekend. And so I traveled to wrestle in the Lock Haven Open. And John got me an exhibition match against Penn State. So here we go. It's, you know, my first, probably my second time to fly in an airplane, you know, in my life. Right. And now I'm traveling with the Oklahoma State team. We go to Penn State. You know, John, I don't know ahead of time, really. John just says, hey, they have an extra guy. He was a 77 pounder. He's like, you know, he's 77 pounder, but we can get you a match. So we're going to do it before the duel. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh man, this is like, whoo, all of a sudden it was like, wow, this is crazy. I'm actually going to wrestle. And so we, you know, we go through warm up and everything. And then the team goes back into the locker room and I stay out on the bench with Mark Perry. And it's, you know, I don't know what to expect, but rec hall, they turn all the lights off. They have the spotlight on the mat. I'm like, well, we really didn't need to do this for me. I'm like, completely intimidated. 'Cause I'm like, this is beyond, like, really, we could have just done this in the wrestling room. Like, we did, the fans are there. It was packed. I remember my cousin, she was she was getting her doctorate at Penn State. And so she actually came to the duel. So I had family there, which was crazy. She was from Texas, but was up there going to grad school. And so I did have a cheering person. So it was kind of funny, but yeah, I walked out, I wrestled, I ended up winning the match. And not a single soul on the bench except for Mark Perry. And then me and Mark go back in the locker room. And, you know, the door opens and they go, how'd you do? And I'm like, I won. And they're like, all right. You know, they're like, oh, we're going to go out. You know, I'm like, but you guys weren't even there. Like, wait a minute. You guys are rallying around an exhibition match that nobody watched and nobody knew what was going on. So, yeah, it was a little, that was humbling. And then, yeah, a huge duel, you know, and a great way to really establish ourselves right at the beginning of the year as you know, a team to beat, right? So it was intense. It was a cool experience.
That is cool. I've never even heard of a college duel throwing a match out there ahead of time, maybe at like the middle school level or high school, right? Not at rec hall on a Friday night.
Yeah, it was a weird deal with what I think at the time we were 2-3, right? So
yeah,
you had a duel of 2-3 and we're going to throw an exhibition match out. So it was awesome. And then John treated us by taking us to pretty much like a homeless shelter on Thanksgiving. He fed us for 50 cents a meal. He took the whole team and it was 50 cents for Thanksgiving meal. That's what we ate on Thanksgiving.
During the trip, you guys were out there?
Yeah. Yeah. We were on the trip on Thanksgiving. And I couldn't tell you like, was the duel Friday and the tournament Saturday? But, obviously Thursday, we were out there Thursday on Thanksgiving Day. And that's where, you know, that was my first big time experience of let's go to a soup kitchen. And John ponied up 50 cents a person to feed us. Oh, the big God. Time finally.
That's so typical of everything I've heard about John, though, in terms of he's very tight with the dollar.
Man. With us. It was rough. By the time I graduated, we were getting $6 per diem for a meal by the time I'd become a senior. And I remember that because we got into a little bit of a dispute around the All-Star match. And John said, well, I'm not going to give you your $6. That's what we got for per diem. And he's like, I'm not going to give you your $6. And I said, well, fine. I won't give you your 6 points then. So I do. That's how I remember that is, we had went from 50 cent soup kitchen meals to $6. You can go to Subway and almost get a meal deal out of the thing.
Big time then.
Oh, yeah.
So when was your first time where John came to you and said, you're going to be our starter?
Well, so, you know,
not like the, not the final determination, but the first time you got a chance to get in the lineup that year.
Yeah. You know, when we, so the Lock Haven Open was, before that we had wrestled in the St. Louis Open, which was a huge tournament, and I didn't place. And I had two guys, which was, Willie Thompson and George Parker were the two other guys at my weight. And they both placed, probably top three at St. Louis Open. Then we went to Lock Haven Open, which was, and so John traveled all three of us to the Lock Haven Open as well. And we didn't, you know, that was kind of our ranking situations. And I met both those guys at the Lock Haven Open and lost to both of them. So I was a good solid third, you know, I mean, I had done everything I could that month to establish myself as the third guy. And to be honest, it was in December at some point. Things kind of laid low for a few weeks as we wrestled. And it was about probably mid-December, John just said, you got a ranking match. And I tell that story to my team all the time because I see it year in and year out because we host the Cowboy Open at Wyoming here. And it's always the first week in November. And that's what everybody gets geared up for. It's our home tournament. It's a big open tournament. Everybody's fired up and geared up for it. And then when things don't go right for the individuals that it doesn't go right for, it's kind of like, well, that was my chance. There goes my season. And it's, they throw up the white flag and it's, so I tell that experience all the time going, if I establish myself as the solid third guy, why in the world would John come to me in the middle of December and say, you have a ranking match? Now I'm only assuming I've never had that conversation, but I assume I go because I didn't quit, because I didn't lay down and just take it, because I kept fighting in practice, because I probably was getting the best of those guys in the workout room, but I couldn't do it when it counted. And John saw that. And you know, the coaching staff saw that. So I got another opportunity and I finally beat those guys in a ranking match. And it was right before the Missouri duel. It was for the Missouri duel. So John gave me basically an opportunity to earn it. It wasn't like we're going to throw you in there and see what you do. I still had to go earn it. So I won the ranking matches, had to beat both those guys, very close matches, 1 point matches, I'm sure. And then I got the chance to wrestle against Missouri, which, you know, good or bad, whatever you want to say, it was Sean Fry, and he was the number one guy in the country and the returning runner up. And that was my first varsity match. So it was at Gallagher. I went into overtime with him and got beat into overtime. And it was a real mind blowing experience, because here I was the third string guy until that week. I went from 3-1, right, you know, in a matter of that week, and then went toe-to-toe with the number one guy in the country. And when we, you know, that was back when Missouri was, they only had one good guy.
Yeah.
You know, they were not a good team back then. They were at the bottom of the Big Eight every year, but he was definitely their guy. And so we crushed him as a team and dominated them as a team, and I lost, but it was about me, and it was weird. The fans, I mean, after the duel, tons of people coming up, probably didn't even have a clue who I was or, you know, where, you know, what in the world, who's this kid they're rolling out at. So, you know, all this stuff, all of a sudden, it was like I went into overtime with the number one guy, and I was being heralded. I mean, everybody was telling me how great I did in a loss.
Right.
Which was weird. You know, I mean, I remember being embarrassed going, why are you guys congratulating me? I got beat. But it definitely was a statement. I saw it as a loss. I saw it as a loss. I didn't see it as anything but a loss. And I still have it to this day. The Daily O'Collegian, you know, the O'Colly, the school newspaper. I was on the front page. And it was the article was about me, a huge picture of me. The article was about me. And here we dominated the team, and I was one of the only guys to lose. And it was still about me. And my roommate laminated it and brought it home. And he wrote on the back in a Sharpie, you know, you finally did it. I knew you could do it and all this stuff. And I'm like, do it. Like, I got beat. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed that the article was about me losing. And, you know, I keep that, and I've kept that for 30 years, because it was, in my mind, it was where I had finally, I recognized my maturity, that I'm like, I'm not like, people are patting me on the back and it's making me mad. And it's disturbing to me that I'm getting congratulated for losing. So it definitely was it was kind of a coming out, but yet here I was getting beat. My next match, Arizona State, Marcus Malika, the returning national champion. And of course we had our battles through the years, but that one wasn't a battle. He just obliterated me. I think he took me down 6-0, and all my points were escapes, and it was the same move every time. And so it was, you talk about from going, okay, I just went to overtime with Sean Fry, and now I just got, you know, my butt handed to me. And so it was like, well, let's not get too excited yet, right? So I still had a ways to go. But that was really the story of my coming out and getting in the lineup. Was I got in the lineup, and it may have been the worst thing for me, because my first several matches were just hammers that all of a sudden it was like, well, we got excited. He went into overtime, but maybe we shouldn't have got so excited, because I definitely had a nice little losing streak going.
So they leave you in after that? They pull you back out as you near the
Big
Eights?
They left me in, and we go to national duels, which were always in Lincoln back then. We go to national duels, and I actually had a little bit of a breakout at national duels. I beat Stan Banks, an All-American from North Carolina. That was kind of my first. I think my only match I lost was to Ray Brinzer at Iowa, and it was a pretty close match, but I beat some solid guys. I think I only lost that one match. So that was my first real breakthrough. And the crazy thing is, it was timing, because like I said, we had George Parker and we had Willie Thompson. Well, our 177 pounder was Travis Gittins. And so we're in Lincoln. And I won't go into too many details, but basically Travis and Willie were really best friends. And they had a, they kind of had a dispute while we were in Lincoln wrestling. When we got back to Stillwater, Travis went and found Willie, and I don't know the details, but basically I do know a fight ensued, and Travis broke his hand, in a fight with his best friend, Willie Thompson, who was at my weight. So now Willie's off the team after that point. Willie is gone, never comes back. George, because Travis broke his hand, George had to go up to 177. So that essentially bought me 6 weeks. It bought me 6 weeks of I was the only option. So that really is what kind of held me in that lineup through those struggles. So we came back, and I went on another losing streak. So again, I had a little bit of a high, and then I'm not getting beat by NCAA champs or number one ranked guys. I'm just getting beat by guys I shouldn't get beat by. But they didn't really have a choice. They didn't really have an option. So I had that security to stay in the lineup, and I stayed in there all the way through the end of February. And then Travis was back. Travis's hand healed. He was back in the lineup, and it was during the Oklahoma State tournament. So the last weekend in February, John tells me, you're going to have a ranking match for the best 2 out of 3 to see who goes to Big Eights. So I went through from basically mid-December to the end of February, I had held the spot. And then all of a sudden it was, this is two out of three to see who goes to Big Eights. And so we had ranking matches at the state tournament between sessions, because the state tournament was in, you know, it was in Gallagher. And so literally they announce, hey, stick around after the semifinals, we're going to have a ranking match, you know, for 167 pounds. So me and George Parker wrestled the best 2 out of 3 during the state tournament.
So was that after the Iowa duel that was in Stillwater, which was senior night?
Yeah.
So did you get bumped up in that? Because there was some crazy maneuvering in the upper weights. They moved someone up to like heavyweight to wrestle Joel Sherritt.
Yeah. So that was they moved George Parker up to 190 to wrestle Sherritt, and George loses by a decision, which was huge. George was very tough. There's no doubt. I didn't have any doubt then. I don't have any doubt now. I don't think very many people that knew George Parker had any doubt that he would All-American that year. And that was kind of he was a pretty sure All-American in that year when we needed an All-American, and I had a losing record. So, you know, George was very tough. So he goes up, he bumps up, he wrestles Sherritt. He loses by decision. And then McGrew, JJ, bumped up to heavyweight and beat their heavyweight and really won the duel for us. And again, that was another situation where Joey Wildeson, you know, had our 118 pounder. He flaked out and was gone. And that was kind of a weird roller coaster, but yeah, that was a crazy duel, but I didn't bump up. Joe beat Pat, Pat, that's where Pat Tech, Joe Williams. That was the loudest I ever heard Gallagher. And I was in the back warming up. So I was behind the bleachers warming up, and I had my headgear on, and I'm back there just, you know, moving my feet, doing some stance and motion. And it kept getting louder and kept getting louder and kept getting louder. And it was like deafening to, then I couldn't hear anything. And so, I don't know if you've ever had that experience, but it's kind of like if you shoot a gun and your ears are kind of ringing, you can't really hear anything. It got so loud that then it just got muffled. It was like just a hum and a buzz, and I couldn't. And I was like, oh my God, like I'd never heard anything like that. And then I had to go out there I had to follow that. And I brought the crowd back down, got them, you know, settled down for the rest of the duel. So I did my part, you know, to get everybody settled back into their seats. I went out and lost to, I think Matt Neerham was who I wrestled.
So what was the crowd getting loud for?
Oh, I mean, Pat was just putting on a takedown clinic, and everybody was talking about how this, you know, which, you know, obviously Joe Williams went on to have an amazing career, but he was known then as this is the guy that's going to beat Pat. This is the guy that, you know, this freshman hotshot's going to come in and knock off Pat Smith. And it was, you know, obviously it wasn't even close. I mean, Pat just tore him apart, may have teched him in the first period or early in the second. It was quick. And it was a takedown clinic. And so I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of it. Didn't see one of the takedowns. I was in the back just going, what is happening? Oh my God. It's so crazy loud. So yeah, it was pretty cool. But like I said, you know, you can't just live on those highs. So I did my part to bring everybody back down.
Well, it's funny you say that. I'm from Illinois, and Joe Williams is like godlike status to Illinoisans. And, you know, I'm the biggest fan of him, but you know, once I was doing research for this, I go, oh shit. In the 94 season, his first match out of redshirt, Gable, you know, because the year before Gable had pulled McIlravey late in the year and it paid off, right? He beat Abbas. And then this year he pulls Joe like late February and it backfires big time and Joe gets like seventh. But it's just like, it's amazing to see whose people's first college matches are. You know, it's always a lot of times it's a hammer, just like Pat got beat his first match against Dan Russell.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It is. I mean, I think about
mine. Your first match.
My first match is the number one guy. And you know, I don't know. I mean, it is kind of weird. You don't see that. I don't think you see that as much now, for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem like it happens as much as it used to maybe, but it's crazy.
Well, back then, every match in the Big Eight seemed like it was loaded because Nebraska was coming on. I mean, there was just some really tough Big Eight brackets back at that time.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and that was back in the old days where top three went. You know, top three were guaranteed, and then you had wild cards. But you know, it was a small tournament, but it was a beast. You know, and you know, just me trying to get third was not likely, I guess. You know, the way you looked at it is probably wasn't very likely that I would qualify to the NCAAs, you know, and particularly, at my weight, Sean Fry was still ranked number one when we went into the Big Eights. Jason Leonard was, the second guy, and he was sixth in the country. And then after that, it was, myself, Nebraska, Iowa State. And it was kind of like, basically a free, you know, a toss up who would pull that third spot.
And at that point,
so it was,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no,
I was just going to say at that point, what was the mood towards chances of winning a team title at that point for you guys?
You know, it was good. I mean, we did lose the duel, in Minneapolis, but the circumstances around that, and specifically with Joey Wildeson being ranked second in the country and disappearing on the road. And that's what, I mean, literally we go to bed at night and we wake up with a note on a pillow that says, you don't find me, you know, don't try to find me. And we're in the Twin Cities and he's gone, and disappears from the team. And we didn't travel another guy. I mean, nobody knew that was coming. So we literally are just in that situation where we have to throw away 6 points at the beginning. And then Nick Perler gets upset by, Tim Harris. And that's, you know, obviously that was back when you started every duel at 118. So we start off six in the hole, and then and at the time Nick was ranked number one, he gets upset. So we go down 9-0, and really things didn't work out well in that duel. But even after that duel, I don't think anybody was panicking. I mean, we still felt like we were the best team.
Yeah.
And so I think we felt pretty comfortable at the end of that year of winning a team title.
Well, and as you guys were leading up to the Nationals, both John and Pat, when I interviewed them, they spoke about this story as if like they got chills talking about this. So after the big eights, you really start coming on, and John Smith is telling me about a month ago, he's like, listen, Mark Branch was beating the brakes off Pat Smith. I didn't know what I was watching. I was getting worried because Pat was losing confidence. So before we get to that story, just tell us about what your experience was like wrestling Pat during your first year and a half. Were you just taking beating after beating? Were you going even? Like, how did it go when you wrestled him at the beginning?
Yeah, I would say ugly beatings, you know. And when I mean, Pat was relentless. Pat was, you know, he was brutal to work out with. And I don't know. I don't know if that was just the way he was, because, you know, as you kind of get, as you go through that process, when you get older, it's almost kind of like, I want to keep the young guys, the young bucks. I want them to respect and understand that I'm the guy. Right. And it's kind of like, I want to send a message. And there's a lot of that goes on in college wrestling rooms. There's not a lot of mentorship. And so I don't know if that was part of it or if it was just, I mean, I don't know. I didn't know any different. I mean, Pat was just mean. He would pull your arm on your back, and, you know, my shoulders were jacked up from wrestling Pat. He'd get on top of you. He'd rip your arms, you know, he'd get out on your head and pull your arms out. And I mean, it was, I don't know how I made it through without just having both my shoulders destroyed.
It's funny you say that, because when Pat was a freshman, he talks about how Chris Barnes used to just destroy him. But if he got one takedown on Chris Barnes, it was a win. And at the end of the year, he would score a takedown or two, even though he'd give up 30. So now that you're saying this, I'm betting that's probably what it was. Like, you might have taken Pat down a couple times and Pat gets pissed off, runs out the room, and John has to look after him. In John's eyes, that's you beating him in the match. But really, you probably got a couple scores on him and were feeling good, and Pat just lost it, you know?
Yeah, and he was. I mean, you definitely could tell Pat was stressing out at the end. You know, and I remember that myself. I mean, I went through as a coach. You know, Pat helped me get through that when I was a senior. When I was a senior and Pat was coaching us, he really helped me remember that he went through that, because I was doing it too. I got to the end of my senior year and I was freaking out. And if, you know, if I had a practice where a guy took me down that I didn't think should have, I broke. And it's funny, because you say that, and that's exactly, I remember leaving the room, and I remember busting out of the room and running out on the track, and I was out there bawling. And I remember Pat came and found me, and he was like, dude, it's, you're fine. You're going to smash everybody. You know, he's like, you're going to kick everybody's ass. Like, don't worry about it. It happens to us all, you know? And I just remember him bringing me back into the room, you know? So, yeah, that very much is probably, you know, you're in your own world. I mean, I'm trying to stay on the team or trying to figure out how to qualify for NCAA. So I'm not worried about Pat, but I definitely remember him being pissed a lot, punching people, you know, and I was at the receiving end of some of those. So I remember that. And that's just, that's a level of just like that, just stressed out. And really you're wanting it to be over. And that's a hard way to wrestle. It's a hard thing to manage of, I want to be done. I want the season over. I want to win. I want to get my hand raised, but man, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of practicing. I'm tired. I just want to go and do it. And that's that's not the best way to enter a tournament.
Well, and he said he felt that at the beginning of the 92-93 season, and that's why he was going to go to Arizona State, because he didn't want a red shirt, you know? So your true freshman year, he's feeling that already. Fast forward another 18 months, he's really feeling the pressure then. I mean, how often were people coming up to him asking him about four titles?
Oh, yeah, daily. That was what it was all about, you know? So it was – I can't imagine that level of stress that he felt, you know. I mean, it is, I think, very few people are in a situation in their life when they're, you know, if you probably want to get to that level, most people who face that in their life, it's about probably bigger things. Like, how am I going to feed my kids and how am I going to pay my bills? And, you know, but it's funny that an athlete would put that pressure that kind of same like live or die. Like, but I think we do, you know, and I always say that about the sport of wrestling. It's such a, you make so many sacrifices that it feels like life and death, and it's not. And it's hard to remember that sometimes. You feel like, man, it you get to that point going, there's only one answer. There's only one outcome that is acceptable. And there, that was how Pat was, right? There was only one outcome that would suffice. And that's winning a fourth and being the first to do it. I mean, nothing short of that. There's nothing. That's, you have to do that. Right. And there's nothing, I mean, you know, we felt that way. Like there is no other answer. I have to do this. So it's a good and bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, and like you said, everyone at the end, only gold will do. And at that point, even when you win, it's not even close to the same level of satisfaction. It's more relief than actual bliss and enjoyment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I felt that after my career, I felt that relief, and I was glad it was over, but it wasn't. I mean, the difference between 94 and 97 of that, the experience, the feeling, the joy, everything, it was night and day. I mean, those 2 years, there's not, they can't even compare. I wanted it over.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and it probably kept me from wrestling further. And I think that probably kept, Pat from going deeper into a international career.
No question.
So I think, you know, his competitive spirit was so great, but it was a flame that burned so bright that it just burned itself out, you know, and it's tough, man. It's a huge sacrifice.
It is. And it, like you said, wrestling it, when you're in it, it's live, you know, life or death. And a lot of people can never get past that. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people, and about half of them are in that camp where they just can't let it go. And they've never been able to move on past age 21. And that's the highlight of their life. And other people, it's not that way. But the one thing I wanted to hit on before we let you go here is 94 Nationals. So all this is building. You guys travel out to North Carolina. What do you remember of, like, when I say the 94 Nationals, what memories come into your mind about, like, what the arena looked like and what was the venue and kind of the atmosphere out there for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously the biggest arena I'd been in. I'd never been to an NCAA wrestling tournament. And at that time, I mean, I remember watching Todd Chesbro, you know, Chris Barnes. I remember watching, like, when NCAAs were in Oklahoma in like 89 or 90, I remember watching that tournament. We just didn't have access. I didn't have access. So I really, and when I say that, like, I remember it was probably locally aired in Oklahoma, and we had an antenna because I remember watching it. It was so fuzzy. I could hardly see what was going on. So this was obviously like the biggest arena venue moment in my wrestling career. And so, yeah, it was really amazing. And it was kind of like, I you hear about people being a part of the Olympics and they go to the, like, opening ceremonies and you see them, they're walking around. When they show that, you see the American athletes, they're filming everything now on their phone. And that's how I felt, except we didn't have phones. Right. But I just was just like taking it all in and just like, wow, this is the coolest thing. That's what I'm saying. That experience in 94, everything was, you know, from the ground floor up. Like, I was at the ground floor and all the possibilities that weekend were just right there waiting for me. Whereas 97, I'm at the top floor going, I have a long ways I could fall. You know, and so it was such a different deal, but everything was just so, like, free and exciting for me. And so it was really cool. Now it obviously, even once that tournament started, and once I got my first win, then it became like ecstasy, you know. It was, yeah, just like it was a fantasy. It was really you know, a dream to me. I was like, is this real? Is this reality? Am I dreaming all this? I mean, it became really kind of strange. But yeah, it was a neat fun experience. And, you know, I remember how, you know, you didn't have the brackets. You didn't have the brackets like 4 days out. You didn't have the brackets until weigh-ins. And so we weighed in the night before, and that was back when we did day before weigh-ins. So we weighed in, and then they drew the brackets out. And so we met in the room the night before the tournament. We met in the hotel, and John's basically going bracket for bracket. Okay, here, 126, Nick, you're the number one seed. You got so-and-so from Bloomsbury. I mean, who knows, right? And then he just goes up, you know, 134, 142. He's literally handing brackets and talking about who are first round matchups. And he gets to me, you know, he goes, hey, good draw. And I'm like, sweet. And he's like, you got the number two seed. And I was like, oh, I thought maybe a good draw meant I had another unseeded guy. like, what do you mean good draw? And his exact words were, that was the last year where you had to be pulled into the bracket. You had to be pulled through the backside. And so he said, you know, good news is this guy's going to pull you through and you'll get at least two matches in. And he goes, but I'm going to tell you right now, this is a good matchup for you. You can beat this guy. And right then and there, and I did know it. And you talk about the battles with Pat. I mean, if you want to hang your hat on anything, and that I didn't have anything to hang my hat on except for I'm competing with Pat Smith every day. And Pat was like my, you know, a hero of mine right then. And I was like, this guy's the best wrestler in the country, pound for pound weight, you know, he's making history. And this is a guy I get to train with. So when I go to this tournament, everybody in that bracket is less than Pat. And that's how I kind of saw everything of going, my workouts, my practices are more challenging and harder than this tournament's going to be. And so I wasn't intimidated or scared of the tournament. And so even when I got my matchup, I wasn't nervous, intimidated, or scared. I was like, Pat would I equated everything to Pat. I'm like, Pat would kill this guy. And so I'm like, I can go in and compete with him because I can compete with Pat and Pat would go kill this guy. So in my mind, I made my own little, whatever made sense in my head to go, I'm okay. And I can compete with every guy in this weight. And I felt that way. I really, truly felt like I could compete and beat every guy in that bracket. I just needed, you know, one, that first guy, get him out of the way and move on to the next.
And keep so it simple. Once you were in there, you guys are battling, you're rifling off wins, and the team race starts to narrow. Penn State kind of falls off, but then Perler loses for you guys. So I was thinking maybe they're back in, and then you guys really pull ahead. By the time Saturday morning came, was the team title over?
I don't think it was. I don't think it was technically over. You know, and I do know, obviously, my tournament made a huge difference. And you're right. You know, Nick didn't have the tournament that we all thought he was going to have. He had had a great season. I think he'd only lost that one match to Harris, but anyway, you know, him getting upset, we didn't drop as a team because my performance was so unexpected that it pulled us right where we were wanting to be. Right. So we didn't lose track. We didn't lose ground. And so we were still on track, right? Everything was still on track. So, I don't think it was technically over Saturday morning, but I do think because we had us three in the finals that we were where we wanted to be.
And all two other guys, Alan and Pat, they both mentioned this. I want to see if you remember. They said that morning you guys all went to Waffle House for breakfast and that you got a bacon cheeseburger in. And Alan's like, man, you shouldn't be eating that. And Pat's like, this is what he's ate all year, Alan. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I remember getting made fun of. And I remember even like afterwards, I got like a bowl of ice cream and put, you know, M&Ms on it or whatever. And they were just like, oh, what are you? Why would you eat that? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I didn't know. There was no diet. But yeah, exactly right. And I remember Mark Perry, I think Mark took us to breakfast, but I remember him like, you don't change a thing. You eat what you eat. Your body's used to it, you know? And I found that out later on. You mess with your routine. I had a weird routine that after weigh-ins, I would drink dark soda. I would drink like a Coke or a Dr. Pepper. And it settled my stomach. And I would try, if I drank a juice or Gatorade, I would get, you know, diarrhea. I would just get upset stomach. So you find some little things that make you comfortable. And to be honest, I had never put thought into it. It was just, you know, I was a junk food junkie. I really was. I slept in my dorm and in my apartment. I slept with a mini fridge next to my bed that always was full of like Sam, you know, Walmart cola, right? Like I had Sam's cola or their version of Mountain Dew, you know, Mountain Lightning. Yeah. And I remember like, when I was cutting weight, I'd wake up in the middle of the night, you know, how you wake up and you're just like, oh, I'm so thirsty. I would crack open a Sam's cola and just smash it. I'd drink the whole thing and then go back to bed. Wow. I had bad nutritional habits, but those guys, you know, I remember them arguing, going, what are you doing? Why would you eat that? And then, yeah, the other one going, cause that's what he always eats. Like let him do his thing, man. He's here. And it was so cool to be like with those guys. I hadn't really connected. Right. I was a freshman. They were seniors. They were having great seasons. I was having a miserable season. I hadn't really got a chance to at the end of the season. I was getting an opportunity to connect with those two guys for kind of the first time. I was like, man, I'm rubbing shoulders with the big boys. It was pretty exciting for me.
Well, I was going to say, you're sitting there with two of the greatest college wrestlers ever. If it weren't for Tom Brands, Alan Freed would have, you know, obviously won two. Then every time he was at the tournament, he was in the finals, right? And he only lost basically one dude five times. Pat Smith in the finals every single time. So it's like, you couldn't be sitting there with two better guys. And then when you walk into the finals that night, you're walking in with Mark Perry and John Smith. You had to be feeling real good.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when we went back to the arena and that was the first time I saw the elevated stage, and that freaked me out. That was the first time I was like, oh my God, we got to wrestle up on that thing. And I'm like, looking, I'm like, what if you fall off? Like I had never seen wrestling on an elevated stage. And so it was really intimidating to me because I remember walking straight up to it, looking around going, how much room's up here? Like, what if I fall off? And, you know, just being worried about that. But it was kind of like that neat, you know, we walk into the arena, nobody's really there except for a few workers or whatever. And it was just us three. We kind of walk in there and, you know, I definitely like felt a strut, right? Like, man, this is cool. We're going to win a national title. I'm hanging out with Pat Smith and Alan Freed. I'm like, who knew 2 days ago when we got here? Like this is the craziest thing in the world. I remember calling my roommate from a payphone after the semifinals. And, you know, you had to walk up and you had to punch in the, you know, **10*. And, you know, you had to punch in that 50-digit code. I'm calling the partner. I'm like, I won! You know, and we're like, oh my God. It was just like, it was out of body experience. Like I just never, I never expected all that stuff to happen that weekend. So yeah, we walk in the arena. It was like, there was no music playing, I'm sure. But in my head, there was the coolest song playing as we were walking in. We were probably all strutting, walking like, oh yeah. So it was, you know, that was that once in a lifetime experience that in sports, I knew when that happened, I'd never have that again. You know, it was like, I'll never have this feeling again.
What memory do you have of Pat's match that night, if any?
Just, you know, I obviously I'm in the back coming out next, and getting warmed up and getting ready. And, you know, so I'm kind of in the tunnel when the end of the match happens and it was motivating. That was the first time I felt any little bit of pressure. And the only reason was Alan did his job. Pat just made history. I got to come through. You know, I have to, that was the first time I felt like I got to do this. And instead of just being like, man, this is awesome, this is a great experience. I put a little bit of pressure going, I don't be the guy that loses, you know, we just, and by that point, I think, you know, by Pat's victory, we definitely had the title wrapped up. And so we had the thing won. It was like, I can just ruin the night. That's the only thing I can do here. Don't ruin the night. Don't ruin everything. This is perfect. And so I did step out there going, and I was, you know, like I was inspired, obviously very inspired with Pat winning. And it made me feel like, hey, I got to go do this for Pat because this is his night. Like this is special for our fans and I don't want to be a downer.
Yeah.
So I felt like I needed to go out and perform.
That's awesome. Two last quick questions. The first is, what'd you guys do that night after you won?
After party. And yeah, it was crazy because I just remember everybody was like, was I 19 or was I still 18? I was 19. But yeah, I mean, I remember we had our after party at a hotel bar and like, I didn't know anybody, like all these fans coming up, like, you know, screaming, grabbing me, shaking me. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. And so it was like, everybody was a stranger, but everybody was my best friend. And they're like, here, have a beer. And I'm like, I'm 19, man. Like I can't drink. And so, yeah, it was fun. Now the weird thing is Pat and I were late to the party because we had to do the drug test after the finals and neither one of us could pee. And it was me and Pat and basically Kerry McCoy because he was the heavyweight. So me and Pat were in the back and we couldn't pee. They were like these old guys, you know, they're like, you gotta pee. We can't leave. So I'm like slamming waters and orange juices and everything they had. They had ice chests back there. I'm trying to drink as much as I can. I can't pee to save the life of me. I literally get in the shower to try to trigger that. So I'm in the shower with the drug guy. He's got his cup standing there in case it triggers. So I'm back there the whole time. And then we win the title and we're like, thankfully Pat was there. I wouldn't have been out there for the title because they said, you can't leave. And I was like, okay, I can't leave. Pat's like, screw you guys. We just won the title. We're leaving. And so like, Pat's like, let's go. And I'm like, okay. And the guys were like, you can't leave. And they're like, they followed us out there. So they're standing right there as we got the team trophy. And then as soon as we got the team trophy and they awarded us, they took me and Pat right back. And so the rest of everybody leaves. And so it's just me and Pat, Kerry McCoy. Finally, we were able to pee. And Chris Gambrell, who was our manager at the time, is like, let's go. So it was just us three. We jump in a van. He's like, everybody's at the party over at the, whatever hotel we're at. I'm pretty sure it was like a 10-minute drive. We had to stop three times on the highway to pee. We had drank so much. We were like, oh my God. Like we didn't make it 2 minutes out of the parking lot. It was like, I can't hold it. So we were like, pull over again. And me and Pat are both just, you know, peeing all the way to the after party. So, you know, and then when we got there, the party was in full swing. I would say we were at least probably half an hour after everybody at least. So yeah, we just kind of walked in and it was like, yay, you know, and like I said, everybody was my best friend. And I'm like, I've never seen you in my life.
God, that's awesome.
It was cool.
Last question for you, Mr. Branch, is talk about Pat's impact on the state of Arkansas as we wind this thing down here.
Yeah, obviously when I first got to, Laramie in 2008, 2009, I tried to hire Pat, you know, I'd say I tried as hard as I could. And he's like, I'm going to give this thing a go. I'm going to stay here. And this is, you know, a little more security than, and I'm like, security, what kind of security you got? It's Arkansas. There is no wrestling there. Like, I really, I remember like, I didn't want to be pushy, but I'm like, dude, you're coaching a club in Arkansas where there isn't wrestling. This is a chance to go and coach back in the D1, you know, come back to Division I wrestling. I'd love, you know, I wanted to build that program with Pat. Pat and I were best friends and neighbors, you know, for years. And so, you know, he was like, I'm going to stick it out here. And I just remember going, man, you just like, in my, that's how far he's come, because literally I'm like, why would you stay? There is no wrestling in Arkansas. You have a guy that wants to start a club. Great. I mean, great for you, but why would you pass up a chance to come be an assistant here and get back in Division I wrestling? And, you know, I said that as nicely as I could, meaning they're like, man, this is, you're cut out to be, you're a great college coach. You're an amazing college coach. Mm-hmm. You sure you want to do a club? And now look at Arkansas wrestling, right? I mean, they're turning out Division I wrestlers, the amount of programs they built in that state. And obviously Greg Hatcher, who brought Pat, is has made a huge impact on wrestling. But he doesn't do that without bringing in Pat Smith. And that state doesn't do what it's done. And it's amazing to see. It's really, I think for the sport of wrestling, it's so encouraging to go, you take a state that has no history of wrestling, no business. I have high school. I have an old high school teammate, state champion of mine, that's over there coaching. I mean, Arkansas, one of my college teammates from Oklahoma State's over there coaching. Ronnie Delk's over there coaching, you know, wrestled at Oklahoma State and was coaching at Perry. I mean, there's people, high level guys, coaches that are flocking to Arkansas, and you see in a matter of 10 years what mm-hmm. they've done. It's encouraging to go, why not do it everywhere? Right. It's pretty cool. And why, you know, what a better guy, you know, there's not a better guy to do it around, you know, and Pat Smith going to Arkansas into a state that doesn't have any idea what wrestling is. Well, welcome to wrestling 101, right? Pat Smith, you get to start with the best.
And it's not even just the high school numbers, though, to your point. It's colleges. There's more college programs there than there is in Illinois. And we're talking about a hotbed of wrestling versus a state that was never even at Fargo 10 years ago. It's incredible.
It's mind-blowing to see what can be accomplished with, you know, with a vision and the right people, you know. And you know, Pat, I think Pat gave legitimacy to something that had – no basis for legitimacy, right? Like, we have no basis to be legitimate, but it's like, yeah, we do. We got Pat Smith. Right. Why not? You know, and within a few years, all of a sudden they got guys in Fargo, small group. All of a sudden they got a guy on the stand. Now it's year in and year out. So pretty special. He made the right choice, right? As much as I would have loved to have him in Wyoming with me, what he did and what he's done here for the sport has made more of an impact than he could have made in any college wrestling room.
For sure. Coach Branch, this has been an honor. Awesome conversation. You hit on everything I was hoping for. Anything you'd like to add before we hop off here?
No, I can't think of anything, Ryan. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you very much. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too.
Hey guys, if you want to help us spread the word, please rate the episode and share it with your friends. The Smiths was written and directed by Ryan Warner. Executive producers include USA Wrestling and the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. A special thank you to the entire Smith family, Rich Bender and Leroy Smith.
Etched in Stone is an exclusive production of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and USA Wrestling. Download your free souvenir book of any of the Etched in Stone stories produced at nwhof.org. The storybook includes the written story and is filled with pictures and videos of their live matches. And while you're on the website, take a deeper dive into the profiles of the 179 distinguished members inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame.